Chapter 3. A Brief History of Plasma Research. If plasma research is little known even in many academic and scientific circles, it is pretty much unknown to general readers. In fact, many of the greatest and most brilliant scientists of the age have been involved in researching the area, including several Nobel Prize winners. I am proud to have counted some of them as my good friends, to have corresponded with them and discussed their ideas. This book includes a historical view of plasma research. I have written it partly because its implications for our understanding of extraterrestrial intelligence, and indeed our own intelligence, are astonishing. I will start with a brief account of how the terminology of plasma evolved, and this chapter will also introduce some of the eccentric personalities, mind-blowing ideas, and amazing discoveries that feature later in the book. In 1879, Sir William Crookes, an English scientist, discovered in his laboratory in London something strange, which he called the fourth state of matter. Crookes was a chemist as well as a physicist. He discovered the element thallium, for which he is also famous. In 1895, he identified the first known sample of helium, but it was the discovery by Crookes of what he called radiant matter, which we now call plasma, that changed the whole of physics and chemistry. He had been studying cathode rays, which are rays of electrons. He established that they traveled in straight lines, that they could cause fluorescence and generate heat in a Crookes tube, the vacuum tube or valve, which was first invented by him. He had opened the door and let in subatomic particles. I have Crookes's first published report of it in front of me as I write, since I own an original copy of the Proceedings of the Royal Society of London for 1879-80, always like to be up to date, which contains it. It is on page 469, and it is entitled On a Fourth State of Matter. Perhaps it is worth my quoting one of Crookes's astounding concluding remarks in that paper, which I believe has never been reprinted until now. Quote, "These considerations lead to another and curious speculation. The general view is that the molecule, intangible, invisible, and hard to be conceived, is the only true matter, and that which we call matter is nothing more than the effect upon our senses of the movements of molecules, or as John Stuart Mill expresses it, a permanent possibility of sensation. But," and this is in Crookes's view, "the space covered by the motion of molecules has no more right to be called matter than the air traversed by a rifle bullet can be called lead. From this point of view, then, matter is but a mode of motion. At the absolute zero of temperature, the intermolecular movement would stop." This statement of 1879 certainly gives us something to think about at the subatomic level, and it can readily be seen also that Crookes was anticipating the phenomena later to be known as superconductivity, which is discussed later, and superfluidity, also discussed later. Phenomena we will return to when we come to consider quantum mechanical qualities in plasma that may help give rise to intelligence. The great genius Nikola Tesla, who invented alternating current, and thus likewise played a huge part in bringing about the existence of the modern world through making it possible for everyone to have electricity, describes frankly in his autobiography that he only decided to study electricity and commence his electrical inventions, such as the Tesla coil, because of inspiration from Crookes. In his 1919 account of his own life, Tesla wrote, "Two or three months before I was in London, in company with my late friend Sir William Crookes, when spiritualism was discussed, and I was under the full sway of these thoughts, I might not have paid attention to other men, but was susceptible to his arguments, as it was his epical work on radiant matter, which I had read as a student, that made me embrace the electrical career." Later in life, Crookes became so interested in the possible existence of a spirit world that he attempted to apply scientific techniques to psychical research. He became something of a hero to the general public of Victorian and Edwardian England for his boldness in that, but many scientific colleagues pulled their longest faces and accused him of losing his senses and betraying science. However, as we shall see in Chapter 6 when we consider plasma and matters spiritual, Crookes's intuition may well have been ahead of his time and may have been amply justified. Today we call matter in this fourth state plasma, the name given to it by the American scientist Irving Langmuir, who would win the Nobel Prize for Chemistry in 1932. He coined the word because the way a charged gas carries electrons and ions reminded him of the way blood carries red and white corpuscles, so the plasma seemed to him to be alive. And it goes without saying that the plasma they talk about in hospitals and is in the blood is no connection with this physics plasma, other than giving Langmuir this idea for the word. His historic introduction of plasma as a new word in physical science appeared in print for the very first time, together with the word sheaths for the skins of plasmas, in an article entitled Oscillations in Ionized Gases, which was published in August of 1928 in a scientific journal, where he wrote these memorable words. The word plasma will be used to designate that portion of an arc-type discharge in which the densities of ions and electrons are high, but substantially equal. It embraces the whole space not occupied by sheaths. It was then that the science of plasma physics was truly born. All the work that had been done since 1879 on what had been called ionized gases, or radiant matter, became known retrospectively as plasma research. 1941, Lyman Spitzer suggested that interstellar dust particles might be acquiring charge from electrons in the form of ionized gas. That was Spitzer's preferred name for plasma. Ionized gas, as terminology was, as we have just seen, later abandoned. We now know that all interstellar dust is probably charged, but in 1941, this was an astonishing new idea. 1954, the Swedish scientist Hannes Alfvén. Now, I have to say, the Swedish pronunciation of that name is just too much. Alfvén, with an acute accent on the E. I'm going to pronounce it Alfvén. An intentional mispronunciation, because otherwise we'll all go crazy, suggested that planets and comets in our solar system might have been formed as the result of the coagulation of dust particles in the solar nebula that had been charged by plasma. He won the Nobel Prize for Physics in 1970. 1955, Winston Harper Bostick created the first artificial plasmoid, which is a blob of plasma, in his laboratory. Also 1955, Piotr Leonidovich Kapitsa suggested that ball lightning was really a spherical plasmoid, a type of plasma. Between 1930 and 1934, he was the first director of the Mond Laboratory at Cambridge. 1958, Eugene Newman Parker proposed the existence of a solar wind. This proposal was first made by Peter A. Sturrock, with whom I carried on a correspondence on other subjects many years ago, and James Hartle. We now know the solar wind to be two different kinds of plasma wind emanating from the sun. One is called the slow solar wind, which travels at speeds below 450 kilometers per second, and the other is called the fast solar wind, which travels at speeds of between 700 and 800 kilometers per second. But because the sun is rotating clockwise, the beams do not go straight. They swirl with the rotation and form an Archimedean spiral shape in space, and hence they swish across us rather than blasting straight at us. Inherent in them is a powerful magnetic field. The Ulysses spacecraft, which was launched towards the Sun in 1990, detected and thus confirmed the existence of these separate solar wind components in 1994 and 5. The space between the Earth and the Sun is completely filled with solar wind plasma. But prior to 1958, the establishment scientific opinion said that outer space is empty and was composed solely of vacuum. 1958. The Van Allen radiation belts, two donut-shaped belts made of plasma surrounding the Earth, were discovered, which we now know to be made of plasma. These will be considered in Chapter 4. Also in 1958, the United States exploded a 10-megaton atomic bomb in the high atmosphere at 75 kilometers, or 46.6 miles, in order to produce an artificial aurora and study the plasma regions above the planet. The follow-up studies were still going on a year later, so lasting was the damage to the high atmosphere. Many more such atomic blasts followed. In fact, there were more than 100 atomic bombs exploded in the high atmosphere by different countries. It is now believed that all of these atomic explosions and other crazily ill-advised military tinkering with the high atmosphere by both sides in the Cold War contributed to the instabilities of worldwide climate that we see today. 1959. My friend Thomas Gold coined the term magnetosphere to describe a tear-shaped region of magnetized plasma surrounding the planet, which protects it from harmful aspects of the sun's solar winds. Tommy also conducted important research on the universe's continuous creation of matter, an important area of study that is very relevant to complex dusty plasmas, as we will see later. 1960. Theodore G. Northrop and Edward Teller provided the theoretical explanation for the existence of the Van Allen belts. 1961. In the Soviet Union, David Albertovich Frank Kamenetsky suggested in an article for a technical journal that plasma may exist within living organisms. He thus anticipated much of the subject of the latter part of this book. 1962. Chandra Vikramasinghe, while still a PhD student of Sir Fred Hoyle at Cambridge University, proposed that the dust known to exist in interstellar and intergalactic space, until then thought to be ice grains, was really made of carbon. This entirely revolutionary idea, important to this book because, as we have seen, complex dusty plasmas contain such dust, was accepted by the astronomical community 5 years later. 1963. David Pines laid the foundations for quantum plasma physics and collective behavior in solid-state plasmas by his studies of the properties of electron-plasma oscillations in high-density, low-temperature quantum plasmas. In other words, the wobbles that happen in plasmas at extremely low temperatures. This may sound very obscure and technical, but we will see later that it was fundamental to the advance of plasma physics, including with regard to plasma's capacity for bringing some of the weirder quantum phenomena into the macro world. At the same time, my friend Peter Mitchell published his full chemiosmotic theory, as it was called, explaining that the energy functions of biological systems are based upon subatomic currents. This explanation came to be known as vectorial metabolism, because it describes the directions in space of energy usage within the body. In 1972, Peter introduced the term protosity, as already mentioned. He was awarded the Nobel Prize for Chemistry in 1978. 1982. J. Hill and Devamita Ashoka Mendis suggested that the spokes, so called by astronomers because they resemble the spokes of a wheel, found in the rings of Saturn the previous year by Voyager 2, consist of dust that has been charged in a plasma. 1986. Hiroyuki Ikeizi predicted that plasma could exist as crystals. He called them Coulomb crystals, named after Charles Augustin de Coulomb, a pioneer of studies of electricity. He said these crystals could be formed by dust particles in a plasma. This is one of the key discoveries concerning the subject of this book, because crystals can play a vital role in storing information in ways necessary for the evolution of intelligence and for communication. As we will see later, it would be 7 years before Ikeizi's prediction was proved to be correct. 1989. Gary Stewart Selwyn and his team at IBM published his discovery that plasma actually manufactured dust, and that the dust found inside fusion reactors and other sources was not dirt or contamination, as had been assumed, but was created by the plasma itself. In his dramatic experimental discovery, Selwyn was able to show by laser light scattering that starting from single molecules, dust grew naturally from nanometer sizes up to micrometer sizes within the plasma. This changed the whole of the science of plasma research. Until then, plasma dust had been viewed as dirt, and how to avoid the contamination by the dust or dirt was the focus of research attention. But once it had been demonstrated by Selwyn that plasma made its own dust, everything changed, and it was at this point that it became possible to envisage what we now call dusty complex plasma as a unique and very special type of plasma. 1993. Hubertus Maria Thomas and Gregor Eugen Morphil announced at a plasma conference that they had discovered that the plasma crystals predicted in 1986 by Ikeizi do really exist. In 1994, they published their research. At about the same time, two other teams published papers making the same claim by some Chinese and Japanese scientists. As I will explain later on, dusty complex plasmas tend to contain plasma crystals. But it was only in 1993 that it became possible for scientists to make this assumption with confidence, to begin searching for them in earnest, and to include the crystals in their models of the complex interior structures of the plasmas. 1997. Jesper Schou, Philip Scherer, and their team at Stanford University discovered gigantic plasma rivers flowing beneath the photosphere, commonly called the surface, of the sun. A NASA press release from the Goddard Space Flight Center at Greenbelt, Maryland, announced the discovery of jet streams, or rivers, of hot electrically charged gas called plasma flowing beneath the surface of the sun. The press release quoted Jesper Schou. Moreover, in what is a completely new discovery, we have found a jet-like flow near the poles. This flow is totally inside the sun. It is completely unexpected and cannot be seen at the surface. Schou's colleague Philip Scherer was quoted as saying, "These polar streams are on a small scale compared to the whole sun, but they are still immense compared to atmospheric jet streams on the Earth. Ringing the sun at about 75 degrees latitude, they consist of flattened oval regions of about 17,000 miles across, where material moves about 10%, that's about 80 miles per hour, faster than its surroundings. Although these are the smallest structures yet observed inside the sun, each is still large enough to engulf two Earths." Schou and Scherer also discovered that these rivers of plasma extend at least 12,000 miles below the sun's surface, by which they mean the photosphere. Even more extraordinary, Schou and another colleague, Alexander G. Kosovichev, known as Sasha, also discovered 6 additional plasma belts flowing beneath the surface, each of which is more than 40,000 miles across. If you add the widths of these flowing plasma regions together, they come to 257,000 miles total width of flowing plasma streams beneath the sun's surface. Just to put this number in perspective, it is greater than the average distance of the Earth from the moon, which is 238,855 miles. Bearing in mind that the orbit is not a perfect circle, hence it's the average distance. This discovery showed that dusty complex plasmas can contain fantastically intricate internal structures consisting of gaseous, liquid, and solid crystal plasma components, and that the crystals can liquefy and the liquids can crystallize. Dust and dusty plasmas are ubiquitous in nature, occurring in interplanetary and interstellar clouds, dust rings round planets like Saturn, on the surface of the moon, noctilucent clouds, that means night shining clouds, in the mesosphere, which is the third layer of the atmosphere just above the stratosphere, or thunderclouds. The ways in which charged dust forms self-organized systems in plasma is key to this book. But because dust can be so varied, we might well ask if we need special kinds of dust in order to have self-organization take place, or will any old dust do? On this point, there has been a surprising recent discovery announced on the 28th of November 2019 in Nature. It was a news story about a paper just published in Physical Review Letters, whereby some scientists at Northwestern University in America had shown that tiny plastic beads wandering aimlessly through water can spontaneously form organized swarms and clusters, just like swimming bacteria. The polystyrene spheres artificially replicate bacterial swarming, to use their words. This was accomplished by putting the microspheres in oil and subjecting them to pulses from an electrical field. As a result of this, the spheres became electrically charged and began, quote, to suddenly spin and propel themselves through the fluid, unquote. By altering the pulses, the spheres were made to cluster together into large clumps. After this, by shortening the pulses, the result was, quote, the formation of one continuous roiling swarm of beads, unquote, which resembled the swarming of bacteria. When confronted with this kind of behavior in inanimate particles, simply as a result of the influence of electrical fields, one realizes that what seems to be informed behavior or self-directed behavior can manifest without life in the conventional sense, even being present, much less in charge. This is a rather sobering realization. If the same behavior exhibited by bacteria can also be seen in inanimate plastic spheres, then what does this really mean? At a fundamental level, we see here, with the lifelike behavior of inanimate particles so precisely mimicking living things that even the very definition of life is threatened. We need to keep uppermost in our minds that the question, what is life, is not going to go away, and we will need to bring it to bear when we consider the question of whether or not plasmas can be said to be living, intelligent, and conscious. The phenomenon of the patterned clustering of microparticles is fundamental in dusty complex plasmas. When it happens, the clumps are known either as Coulomb balls, once again named after the scientist Coulomb, as with the earlier case, or as Yukawa balls. The latter are named after Hideki Yukawa, the Japanese Nobel laureate physicist. Turning back to the question of where the dust comes from, in addition to the discovery that plasma manufactures its own dust, in 2017, Hamish Gordon and his collaborators revealed that the atmosphere also manufactures its own new particles spontaneously, from gas within the air itself. The new particles are nano-sized, and they form in clouds in the Earth's atmosphere from condensable vapors. The authors of this report in the Journal of Geophysical Research state, new particle formation has been estimated to produce around half of cloud-forming particles in the present-day atmosphere. They define new particle formation as the process by which gas molecules collide and stick together to form atmospheric aerosol particles. That means particles floating in the air. Aerosols act as seeds for cloud droplets. That's their quote. A paper later in the same year by Robert Wagner and his collaborators, which included Gordon, reported further, the formation of secondary particles in the atmosphere accounts for more than half of global cloud condensation nuclei. They went on to say that their experiments at CERN revealed that the formation of these particles was aided by ions in a positively charged plasma. Quote, our results indicate that ions enhance the nucleation process, that means the formation of nuclei around which particles can grow, when the charge is necessary to stabilize newly formed clusters. In the autumn of 2018, a further paper appeared on this subject by Dominik Stolzenberg, Paul M. Winkler, and their collaborators. They said, nucleation and growth of aerosol particles from atmospheric vapors constitutes a major source of global cloud nuclei. And further work on this subject was published in Nature in October of 2019 when Christina J. Williamson and her collaborators reported crucial new findings about the subject. This team of researchers has discovered that new particle formation in the atmosphere persists at all longitudes as a global scale band in the tropical upper troposphere, covering about 40% of Earth's surface. Unquote. They say that global climate models do not take account of this, and the existing climate models, quote, underestimate both the magnitude of tropical tropospheric new particle formation and the subsequent growth of new particles to cloud condensation nuclei sizes. Close quote. Accordingly, all public climate change discussions at the moment are deeply flawed because they rely upon inaccurate models. Please note, in the climate controversies going on every day in the press, the models that are being used at the moment are not correct. They need to take these new findings into account, which has not yet happened. This team says, quote, new particles form in the atmosphere when condensing gases form stable clusters with diameters of more than 15 nanometers or so, close quote. They then say that these particles are too small for detection by satellites, which are unable to detect particles smaller than 100 nanometers, and these were 15 nanometers. That is why this important phenomenon has been missed, because it is so difficult to detect by our existing technology. As a result of these new findings, NASA has recently set up a program to try to obtain more detailed information about these new particles in the atmosphere so that we can know how they affect our climate models and, of course, our climate itself. So, don't worry, the climate models will be revised, but just not yet. The formation of these tiny particles out of, quote, nothing, unquote, in our atmosphere is very similar to the formation of tiny particles out of, quote, nothing, unquote, in plasma, as both are a result of clustering processes within the two separate media of plasma and air. And both processes are quite recent discoveries. The plasma processes have been known for several years now, though not widely so, and as we have just seen, the atmospheric processes are an even newer revelation. The similarities of, quote, appearing to get something out of nothing, unquote, in both plasma and in air suggests that a universal process is being manifested in the two different cases. And considering that, it is perhaps not surprising there is also another way of getting something out of nothing, which has been known since the 1990s. And it operates at an even more fundamental level. I am referring to the creation of a type of subatomic particle known as a baryon, B-A-R-Y-O-N. Experiments have verified that the creation of baryon particles can occur when whirling vortices are created in a fluid medium such as helium-3, which is a form of helium with a quality of superfluidity. This phenomenon is an important part of some of the weird quantum effects associated with plasmas, as we shall see shortly. And it arises when liquids can flow without resistance. That's what superfluidity is. A key article revealing a particularly important finding about this was published in Nature in 1997. I have kept that issue of the magazine folded over to that article to remind me ever since it was published in the spring of that year. It shows how disorganized my study is. It was the group led by T.D.C. Bevan who published this key article about what they called baryogenesis, in other words, baryon creation. Bevan went on to publish much more about this type of thing over the succeeding years. But this particular article was the first time that the creation of baryons by this method had been demonstrated in a laboratory. Quote, "Here we describe experiments on helium-3 that demonstrate the creation of excitation momentum, which we call momentogenesis, by quantized vortices." That means flows around an axis at a quantum level of smallness in the superfluid. Our results provide quantitative support for this type of baryogenesis, creation of baryons. I cannot take space to explain this fully or do justice to the details, especially as it involves discussing quarks, chirality, spectral flow, and all kinds of things of that sort which are not necessary in this book, but may be found by consulting the many papers of Bevan and his teams directly. The main thing to come out of all this is the demonstration that those nuclear particles known as baryons have been created in the laboratory, and that they are also being created in a similar manner throughout space in superfluids, such as those to be found, as we shall discuss later, in dusty complex plasmas. So we see clearly and repeatedly that it does not take something to create something, as it can just as readily be created by nothing. So what is existence, if it can suddenly appear like that? The plasma physicist who has done the most to call attention to the creation of matter within dusty complex plasma clouds is without question the Russian scientist Vadim Nikolaevich Tsitovich, who unfortunately died in 2015. For many years, he published articles and books reporting on advanced findings from dusty complex plasma research, showing that something which looks very like life can be produced in charged dust clouds. In one article in 2007, he stated clearly, quote, "It is concluded that complex self-organized plasma structures exhibit all the necessary properties to qualify them as candidates for inorganic living matter that may exist in space, provided certain conditions allow them to evolve naturally." Close quote. Tsitovich and three colleagues, including Sadruddin Benkada, were very specific about the self-organization within dusty plasmas of life-like phenomena, especially in an article that they published in 2000, in which I shall quote in a moment. But one technical word, dissipative, needs to be explained first. It does not refer to the common use of the word dissipation to describe overindulgence in sensual pleasures. Dissipative in this sense was first introduced into science in 1972 by the Belgian mathematical theorist Jan-Camille Willems, and became widespread because of its adoption and development by Ilya Romanovich Prigozhin, the Nobel laureate for chemistry in 1977. Prigozhin entirely revolutionized the science of thermodynamics, which is essentially the study of the actions of heat and all that follows from them. Until Prigogine, it was widely believed that the universe was steadily running down, that things slow down and fall apart, as the second law of thermodynamics says they will. What Prigogine discovered and proved was that energy brought into a chemical system, instead of always contributing by a process known as the increase of entropy, in other words, the progressive increase of disorder, could be dissipated away into other directions and purposes that were productive, and could form open, interactive structures such as life forms, known technically, therefore, as dissipative structures. That's because the energy was dissipated away. That's why they're called dissipative structures. You have to get used to that terminology. These structures being like isolated islands of positivity in a sea of increasing entropy and hopelessness could instead become increasingly complex and self-organizing systems. Prigogine built upon these discoveries his concepts of self-organization, which are now at the heart of what we are finding in dusty complex plasmas. So what Prigogine did was no less than explain the central role of life in the universe. The central role of life in the universe, just think about that. Although this was by no means heard by everyone, it was the philosophical death knell for the mechanical universe. I was very fortunate to spend a whole day with Prigogine and his team in Brussels many years ago. What a character he was. Quite an extrovert. And so we return to Tsitovich and his colleagues, and to plasma. Here are further comments made by Tsitovich and three colleagues in 2000. Quote, self-organization processes in dusty plasma are expected to be very important, since the latter is an open system with a high rate of dissipation. A high rate of dissipation provides rapid development of self-organization processes and formation of long-lived dissipative structures. Dusty plasma is an open system where the rate of dissipation is high and there is a tendency to self-organization. New types of non-linear interactions are possible in dusty plasmas. Unquote. The importance of dusty plasmas being open systems is that they can absorb energy from outside, which then fires the growth of complexity. The Kordalevsky clouds undoubtedly feed on energy from the sun in this way. The next year, in 2001, Tsitovich published a paper, Evolution of Voids in Dusty Plasmas, on the important subject of voids, or empty spaces, inside dusty complex plasmas. It is shown that formation of dust voids is a general phenomenon in dusty plasmas, he said. Voids are of immense importance in general, though rarely recognized. He went on to explain that whereas both dust structures and dust voids are formed in some plasmas, this cannot happen in a purely homogeneous dusty plasma. There can be no internal architecture if the dust structures are not separated from one another by voids. A structure must be separated from the rest of the mass by a space, for otherwise it is no longer a distinct structure. It is surprising how rarely people think of this. The human body is full of voids, and if it were not, you could not differentiate the kidney from the liver or the stomach from the lungs. Technically, these voids within our bodies are known as body cavities. And if the Kordalevsky clouds are to have the complex internal structure that we know dusty complex plasmas to have, then they too must contain voids or cavities. In 2004, Tsitovich and his friend Gregor Eugen Morphil, another of the world's most distinguished plasma scientists, published a paper making clear that it is the nonlinear character of the dusty complex plasmas which makes the self-organization of the internal structures possible. Quote, dusty plasmas are unusual states of matter where the interactions between the dust grains can be collective and are not a sum of all pair-particle interactions. This state of matter is appropriate to form nonlinear, dissipative, collective self-organized structures, unquote. They pointed out that such findings were compatible with recent results of structure observation in the experiments on the International Space Station. There were numerous plasma experiments carried out on the space station because scientists were eager to see how plasmas behave in a gravity-free environment. Many results have come from this work. In 2014, a major paper was published by Tsitovich with Alexei Ivlev, Andreas Burkert, and his old friend and colleague Morfil. It was a long and important review article entitled Compact Dusty Clouds in a Cosmic Environment. In this paper, Tsitovich and his colleagues pointed out that in order to be stable, a dust cloud must self-organize and fill itself with clumps and internal structure. If a dust cloud remains smooth, it will be destroyed. They also said that such stable clouds can be as small as 1/1000th the size of the Earth and still cohere. That means hold together. So we have their assurance, therefore, that the Kordaleski clouds must contain internal structure and be self-organized in order to have survived. And they further add that this is all possible while remaining optically thin, in quotes. In other words, being invisible. The authors also say that within dusty plasmas, dust can confine itself into stable spherical clusters. Quote, spherical dusty clouds can be formed, suggesting that this process of dust self-organization might be a generic phenomenon occurring in different astrophysical media. We argue that compact dusty clouds can represent condensation seeds, in other words, they can provide the necessary conditions, for a population of small-scale, cold, gaseous clumps in the diffuse interstellar medium. They could play an important role in regulating its small-scale structure and its thermodynamic evolution. Self-organization of dusty complex plasmas has been observed in numerous experiments. Different types of structures formed in dusty plasmas under microgravity conditions, in experiments performed on the International Space Station, as well as on the ground, include compact clusters, voids surrounded by dust shells, vortices, etc. We predict that this process can occur in a broad range of plasma parameters, which indicates that such self-organization might be a generic phenomenon operating in different astrophysical media. Unquote. The giant spherical cosmic clouds discussed by Tsitovich and his colleagues, having between 10 and 100 times the distance of the Earth to the Sun as their diameters, are much bigger than our Kordaleski clouds, and the giant ones he is discussing are also seen as forming in interstellar space between the stars, in a far thinner medium, whereas the smaller Kordaleski clouds are in our own solar system, with a much denser medium, and with the constant feeding of energy into them by the solar wind. Sergei Vladimirov, another of the most famous plasma scientists, has written, quote, the dust plasma system is an open system. Strong interactions of dust particles and the openness of the system lead to self-organization and structurization of initially homogeneous dust clouds into a complex aggregate of dissipative dust structures. These structures become quasi-stationary within short timescales. In other words, they very rapidly become almost stationary. In another paper, Tsitovich, Morfil, and four other colleagues stressed how plasma crystals inside the dusty complex plasmas could spontaneously form helical structures resembling DNA. Quote, complex plasmas may naturally self-organize themselves into stable interacting helical structures that exhibit features normally attributed to organic living matter. The self-organization is based on physical mechanisms of plasma interactions. As a result, each helical string composed of solid microparticles, that's dust, is topologically and dynamically controlled by plasma fluxes leading to particle charging. These interacting complex structures exhibit thermodynamic and evolutionary features thought to be peculiar only to living matter. We examine the salient features of this new complex state of soft matter in light of the autonomy, evolution, progenity, and, wait for it, autopoiesis. That refers to a system capable of reproducing and maintaining itself. Big word, autopoiesis. Principles used to define life. It is concluded the complex organized plasma structures exhibit all the necessary properties to qualify them as candidates for inorganic living matter that may exist in space, provided certain conditions allow them to evolve naturally. Shall I read that sentence to you once more? It is concluded that complex organized plasma structures exhibit all the necessary properties to qualify them as candidates for inorganic living matter that may exist in space. That's it, folks. That is what this book is about. This outspoken declaration could almost constitute a manifesto for the Kordalevsky clouds, though it was published 12 years before their existence was confirmed. Of course, helical structures in humans have functions of storing and communicating information. Ever heard of DNA? So, the crucial question raised here is, could helical structures in plasma have the same function? And could these be the seeds of an alternative, evolving form of life? The authors go on to say, memory and reproduction are necessary for a self-organizing dissipative structure to form a, quote, living material. The well-known problem in explaining the origin of life is that the complexity of living creatures is so high that the time necessary to form the simplest organic living structure seems too large compared to the age of the Earth. Can faster evolution rates be achieved for non-organic structures, in particular in space, consisting mostly of plasmas and dust grains, that is, of natural components spread almost everywhere in the universe? If yes, then the question to address is, are the above necessary requirements of self-organization into a kind of living creature present in plasmas containing macroparticles such as dust grains? Here we discuss new aspects of the physics of dust self-organization that can proceed very fast and present an explanation of the grain condensation into highly organized structures first observed as plasma crystal. Our analysis shows that if helical dust structures are formed in space, they can have bifurcations, that means they split, instances of splitting, as memory marks and duplicate each other, and they would reveal a faster evolution rate by competing for food surrounding plasma flows. These structures can have all necessary features to form inorganic life. This should be taken into account for formulation of a new SETI-like program based not only on astrophysical observations, but on planned new laboratory experiments, including those on the International Space Station. In the case of the success of such a program, one should be faced with the possibility of resolving the low rate of evolution of organic life by investigating the possibility that inorganic life invents the organic life. Unquote. The passage specifically says that helical dust structures can replicate, in other words, like helical DNA molecules, inside dust clouds. Inorganic living entities are then formed that, quote, compete for food, unquote, in the form of sources of incoming plasma, which they eat. As we have seen in the case of the Kordalevsky clouds, most of their food consists of the solar wind coming from the sun. All of this happens at a far faster rate of evolution than is the case with organic life, and its development would outpace organic evolution by billions of years, hence clearly gaining dominance. From this point of view, we, as organic humans, are rather primitive latecomers to a fantastically ancient tradition of inorganic life forms. And as they say, a new SETI-like program should be started. SETI, as many readers know, stands for Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence. After all, who needs little green men when you've got gigantic intelligent clouds on your doorstep, which are billions of times more intelligent than any little green man could ever be, billions of years older than any possible organic life form, and the entities who must, in effect, be the true masters of the universe. Throughout this book, we will be looking at research from around the world, particularly America, which complements and reinforces the work of Vadim Nikolaevich Tsitovich and his colleagues. With dust made by the plasma itself, replacing atoms as the building blocks, living bodies can be formed. We might consider the charged dust to be dust atoms, or perhaps more accurately, dust molecules. And from them, charged plasma entities can emerge by the process called self-organization. That means that no outside source needs to create them, as they can create themselves. By this means, plasma people can exist, who are imperceptible to the optic nerves of the physical people, who are made not of plasma, but of flesh and blood. Because we are incapable of directly perceiving the plasma people, we do not know they are there. And furthermore, they may be of such diffuse matter that they can pass through our dense physical matter and emerge intact. Scientists know that ball lightning does this, as we will discuss in Chapter 4. Spiritual beings, such as angels, are also said to have this capability, which we will come to in Chapter 6. If what these scientists are showing, and I for one think they are, is that the internal structures of the two clouds could be so complex, and at such a vast scale, then they surpass any possible human knowledge at this time. The storage capacity for information would easily include the ability to retain full knowledge of everything that has ever happened in our local cosmic environment for 4 billion years. Everyone who has ever lived will be recorded. Every creature that has ever roamed the surface of the earth will be recorded. Every plant which has ever grown will be as well. The presiding consciousnesses, or what psychologists call the executive ego states, of the two clouds will have personalities so alien from our own that we cannot conceive of them. Since the clouds evidently exist as a pair, they may be married, or at least in a civil partnership. The questions are only just beginning. Chapter 4.